Savitri, Book 7, The Book of Yoga, Canto 6, Nirvana and the All-Negating Absolute. This is part 2. It's on pages 536 through 538. Savitri has another step to achieve in her yogic preparation to face Almighty Death when he comes for her husband. Finding her soul is only one stage along the way. Now, she has to attain cosmic consciousness in this spiritual transformation. After she found her soul, she felt that her life was fulfilled. She had found herself. She knew her being's aim, and she was completely happy. She had visions and dreams of the future life she would have with Satchavan. She knew he was not going to be taken from her by death. But there are still parts of Savitri's being that need to progress. She is still vulnerable to the forces of darkness. She was attacked by an adverse force, a lower vital being. A terrible fear came upon her. In her heart, she heard a voice that gave her so much terror that it destroyed her inner world of delight. The way Savitri felt the presence of this voice and what it said to her made her good life and all her wonderful world completely unreal. This is what death does to all of us. Mother explained that in order for death to take us, something in us has to agree. She said, first of all, nothing in your being, no part of your being, should want to die. This does not happen often. You always have a defeatist in you, something that is disgusted, something that has had enough of it, something that is lazy, something that says, let it be finished, so much the better. That is sufficient. You are dead. In one way, death comes to everyone all the time. Throughout our lives, death comes to give the experiences that make our world and all the good things that life means to us unreal. It is different for everybody. The experiences that we find unpleasant destroy the good world our mind and vital have created for us. How it affects us depends on our attitude. Eventually, we get discouraged. We turn away from trying anymore. And this is what makes us old. So in this way, we are dying all the time. When Savitri finally faces death, she has to reject all the things that death is going to say to convince her that she should not want her wonderful life with Satchavan. Mother spoke constantly about how everything depends on our attitude. Savitri's attitude was her grief and fear of Satchavan's death, which she had not completely conquered. It left an opening in her being for a hostile lower vital being to attack her newfound happiness. We saw last time that the experience took a form similar to her idea of death, and this is what she had feared. Sri Aurobindo explains that one of the reasons we should not fear anything is because our fears draw to us the very thing we fear. To Savitri, it felt like a rolling surge of silent death coming from an abysmal deep of grief and fear. She heard its voice in her own depths, speaking to the anguish in her heart. The voice said it was death, and it told her that she could not hope to be happy in a world of pain. She could not sit with God tasting a human joy in a body. Only the blank eternal was true. The destroying voice said that everything else is the ignorance of mind. It said the reality of the soul was an illusion, and that existence was vain. When the darkness moved on and its voice ceased, it left behind Savitri's inner world laid waste. Only her soul remained, its emptied stage waiting for what would happen to her. There was nothing more that she could do. We saw last time that Sri Aurobindo taught that when we have a decisive yogic experience or we make a major progress, the adverse forces which are hostile to evolution can come to attack us. Their self-chosen function is to test us in this way. Savitri has made a major yogic step, and she has been attacked. But it is more than that. Savitri is not yet ready to face death. She has to make more yogic effort, and the voice of her higher self now comes to guide her. Savitri will have to do more yoga to attain the spiritual change, which includes cosmic consciousness. The greater voice comes down from the heights as Savitri waits for the unknown immortal will to bring something into her emptiness. Sri Aurobindo writes that it is the voice of light after the voice of night. It speaks the word that touches the heart and finds the soul. He says, "The cry of the abyss drew heaven's reply." Mother calls this divine grace. She has explained that for the human consciousness, all manifestation of grace is a manifestation of supreme love. She says that when things seem so dark and difficult, later, much later, one day, looking back, we may see that everything that happened, even what seemed to us the worst, was a divine grace to make us advance on the way. Then we become aware that the personal effort, too, was a grace. But before reaching that point, one has to advance much, to struggle much, and sometimes even to suffer a great deal. So now we can see that the dark force which attacked Savitri's happiness is also a divine grace. But we didn't see it that way in the beginning, and neither did Savitri. Mother says, for the ordinary human consciousness, divine love has to cease to be divine to be accepted by man. Love, in its form of grace, is at work everywhere and always. It does its work in an unknown but constant way. No matter how great your faith and trust in the divine grace, no matter how great your capacity to see it at work in all circumstances, at every moment, at every point in life, you will never succeed in understanding the marvelous intensity of its action and the precision, the exactitude with which this action is accomplished. You will never be able to grasp to what extent the grace does everything, is behind everything, organizes everything, conducts everything. And all this so that the march forward to the divine realization may be as swift, as complete, as total, and harmonious as possible, considering the circumstances of the world. Mother says that if one were in union with this grace, if one saw it everywhere, one would begin living a life of exaltation, of all power, of infinite happiness. And that would be the best possible collaboration in the divine work. Mother also explained that we are always under the illusion that pain belongs to us. She said this is not true. Pain is something thrust upon us. And we saw last time that Sri Aurobindo wrote that the fear which opened in Savitri was not hers, but hid its unseen cause. Mother says the same event could occur, exactly the same, in all its details, without inflicting a shadow of pain on you. On the contrary, sometimes it can fill you with ecstatic joy. And it is exactly the same thing. But in one case, you are open to the adverse forces you want to reject from yourself. And in the other, you are not. You are already too far away from them to be affected by them any longer. And so, Instead of feeling the negative side they represent, you feel only the positive side the divine represents in the experience. Then Mother explained exactly why we should feel the positive side. She says, "It is the divine grace which makes you progress, and with the divine grace you feel the divine joy. But instead of identifying yourself with the grace which makes you progress, you identify yourself with the ugly thing you want to get rid of. And, naturally, you feel like it, and you suffer." This is wonderful practical advice for dealing with the things that happen to us which we don't want, or the things which make us feel badly. We should concentrate on the good and joy of the grace, not on what we reject. If we apply it to Savitri's situation here, we can see that if she had more faith in the grace, and if she had opened to the divine grace and felt the joy it carries, and also felt that it had come to show her that she needed to do more in her preparation to save her beloved husband, the whole experience would have been different. She would not have been afraid, and her inner world of love and delight would not have been destroyed. But the grace is always active everywhere. So after the voice of night, Savitri hears the voice of light. Sri Aurobindo says, "The cry of the abyss drew heaven's reply." This is another way of saying the divine grace was there behind everything, and now it acted in a way that would seem more positive to Savitri. The greater voice from the heights is the voice of Savitri's Jiva Atman, her higher self. Her Jiva Atman is her personal portion of the divine, which is always there above her head. Before Savitri began her yoga, this great voice told Savitri to find her soul. It was at the time that Savitri first became depressed and overcome with grief and fear, because at that time she began to see that the date of Satyavan's death was drawing near. At that time the great voice said, "Remember why thou camest. Find out thy soul. Recover thy hid self. In silence, seek God's meaning in thy depths. Then mortal nature change to the divine." Then the great voice told her, "For man thou seekst, not for thyself alone. Accepting his darkness, thou must bring him to light. Accepting his sorrow, thou must bring him to bliss. Man lives in a physical body, made of physical matter. So the voice tells Savitri, in matter's body, find thy heaven-born soul." Savitri is the Divine Mother who took birth in a body of physical matter to help all mankind progress spiritually. Therefore, her actions have a very wide influence. And in this case, Sri Aurobindo is speaking about the unconsciousness and darkness and the ignorance of physical matter itself, the ignorance of the body which Savitri is in. Our body is the last stronghold of the ignorance. One of the unique teachings in Sri Aurobindo's yoga is that full consciousness has to come all the way into our physical cells. Our mind and vital all have their own separate planes, but they have to function in our physical body. Therefore, Savitri has to experience her subconscious, her vital, and her mind all acting in her body. This had to be her pathway to finding her immortal soul. Savitri, as a Divine Mother, does this as a person in a physical body because this adds her consciousness and the results of her efforts to the universal planes for the good of all men and women. Now Savitri's divine guide comes to tell her again that it is not only for herself and what she personally wants that she has to make more yogic progress. It is for mankind also. First, the higher voice advises her not to show her happiness or to indulge in it too much before she has made more progress. This will lay her open to attack. The voice says, "O soul, bear not thy kingdom to the foe. Consent to hide thy royalty of bliss, lest time and fate find out its avenues, and beat with thunderous knock upon thy gates. Hide, whilst thou canst, thy treasure of separate self behind the luminous rampart of thy depths, till of a vaster empire it grows part. This vaster empire is all that will come to Savitri with the spiritual change and transformation. Then the voice tells her, but not for self alone, the self is one. It is not enough for Savitri to make progress only in the depths of her inner being and in her outer life by living in her soul consciousness. She has to achieve spiritualization and universalization. The voice says, content abide not with one conquered realm. Adventure all to make the whole world thine. To break into greater kingdoms, turn thy force. Fear not to be nothing, that thou mayest be all. Assent to the emptiness of the supreme, that all in thee may reach its absolute. Then the voice tells her again that she has come for all mankind. It asks her, if for thine own sake only thou hadst come, an immortal spirit, into the mortal's world, to found thy luminous kingdom in God's dark, in the inconscient realm, one shining star, one door in the ignorance opened upon light, why hadst thou any need to come at all? Thou hast come down into a struggling world to aid a blind and suffering mortal race, to open to light the eyes that could not see, to bring down bliss into the heart of grief, to make thy life a bridge twixt earth and heaven. Then Sri Aurobindo tells us how Savitri has to change herself so the world may change. This truth binds us all together. But for a great being like the Mother, who is Savitri, it is a much greater work. Sri Aurobindo writes that the voice says, if thou wouldst save the toiling universe, the vast universal suffering feel as thine. Thou must bear the sorrow that thou claimest to heal. The day-bringer must walk in darkest night. He who would save the world must share its pain. If he knows not grief, how shall he find grief's cure? If far he walks above mortality's head, how shall the mortal reach that too high path? When Sri Aurobindo wrote this part of Savitri, he wrote about both himself and Mother. Sometimes the ashramites wrote letters to him about how far away he and Mother were, that they could not know how difficult the yoga was for the ashramites and how much they suffered. Sri Aurobindo wrote back that both he and Mother had gone through everything the ashramites were going through and a lot more. If they had not done this, they would not have been able to help and guide other people. The great voice says to Savitri, God must be born on earth and be as man, that man, being human, may grow even as God. He who would save the world must be one with the world. All suffering things contain in his heart's space and bear the grief and joy of all that lives. This was Sri Aurobindo's consciousness, and also Mother's consciousness. In Mother's prayers and meditations, she writes at different times about how universalized her consciousness is. She always writes that divine love is behind all. Here is her prayer written on July 23, 1913. O Lord, inconceivable splendor, may thy beauty spread through all the earth. May thy love be kindled in every heart, and thy peace reign over all. A deep and solemn chant, smiling and subtle, rises from my heart, and I do not know whether this chant goes from me to thee, or comes from thee to me, or whether thou and I are this marvelous chant of which I have just become conscious. Surely there is no longer any thou or I, or any separate universe. Only an immense harmony is there, sublime and infinite, which is all things, and of which all things will one day grow aware. It is the harmony of boundless love, love victorious over all suffering and all obscurity. By this law of love, I want to live more and more integrally. To it, unreservedly, I give myself. And all my being exalts in inexpressible peace. Sri Aurobindo wrote several sonnets about his universalized consciousness. Here is one that he titled Life Unity. I housed within my heart the life of things. All hearts athrob in the world I felt as mine. I shared the joy that in creation sings, and drank its sorrow like a poignant wine. I have felt the anger in another's breast. All passions poured through my world self their waves. One love I shared in a million bosoms expressed. I am the beast man slays, the beast he saves. I spread life's wings of rapture and pain. Black fire and gold fire strove towards one bliss. I rose by them towards a supernal plane of power and love and deathless ecstasies. A deep spiritual calm no touch can sway upholds the mystery of this passion play. Savitri has to achieve this level of universalized consciousness in order to conquer death. Here is Mother's Meditation of April 10th, 1917. My heart has fallen asleep down to the very depths of my being. The whole earth is in a stir and agitation of perpetual change. All life enjoys and suffers, strives, struggles, conquers, is destroyed, and formed again. My heart has fallen asleep down to the very depths of my being. In all these innumerable and manifold elements, I am the will that moves, the thought that acts, the force that realizes, the matter that is put in motion. My heart has fallen asleep down to the very depths of my being. No more personal limits, no more individual action, no longer any separative concentration creating conflict, nothing but a single and infinite oneness. My heart has fallen asleep, down to the very depths of my being. The great voice tells Savitri that the soul of the person who would save the world must be wider than the universe. It must feel eternity as its very stuff. Rejecting the moment's personality, it must know itself older than the birth of time, and know creation an incident in its consciousness. This savior soul must know the great giant stars called Arcturus and Belphegor to be grains of fire circling in a corner of its boundless self. It must know the world's destruction to be a small transient storm in the calm infinity it has become. Then Savitri's higher self tells her to draw back a little from the world that the idea has made, to draw back from her own mind's personal selection from the infinite, to draw back from her senses' gloss on the infinitesimal's dance. Then she will loosen the vast chain, and she will know how the great bondage came. The voice tells her, banish all thought from thee, and be God's void. Then shalt thou uncover the unknowable, and the superconscient conscious grow on thy tops. Infinity's vision through thy gaze shall pierce. Thou shalt look into the eyes of the unknown, find hid truth in things seen null and false. Behind things known, discover mysteries rear. Consent to be nothing and none. Dissolve time's work. Cast off thy mind. Step back from form and name. Annul thyself, that only God may be. The Book of Yoga, Nirvana and the All-Negating Absolute. Then from the heights a greater voice came down, the word that touches the heart and finds the soul. The voice of light after the voice of night. The cry of the abyss drew heaven's reply, a might of storm chased by the might of the sun. O soul, bear not thy kingdom to the foe. Consent to hide thy royalty of bliss, lest time and fate find out its avenues and beat with thunderous knock upon thy gates. Hide, whilst thou canst, thy treasure of separate self behind the luminous rampart of thy depths, till of a vaster empire it grows part. But not for self alone the self is won. Content abide not with one conquered realm. Adventure all to make the whole world thine. To break into greater kingdoms turn thy force. Fear not to be nothing, that thou mayest be all. Assent to the emptiness of the supreme, that all in thee may reach its absolute. Accept to be small and human on the earth, interrupting thy newborn divinity, that man may find his utter self in God. If for thy own sake only thou hadst come, an immortal spirit, into the mortal's world, to found thy luminous kingdom in God's dark, in the inconscient realm, one shining star, one door in the ignorance opened upon light, why hadst thou any need to come at all? Thou hast come down into a struggling world to aid a blind and suffering mortal race, to open to light the eyes that could not see, to bring down bliss into the heart of grief, to make thy life a bridge twixt earth and heaven. If thou wouldst save the toiling universe, the vast universal suffering feel as thine. Thou must bear the sorrow that thou claimest to heal. The day-bringer must walk in darkest night. He who would save the world must share its pain. If he knows not grief, how shall he find grief's cure? If far he walks above mortality's head, how shall the mortal reach that too high path? If one of theirs they see scale heaven's peaks, men then can hope to learn that Titan climb. God must be born on earth and be as man, that man, being human, may grow even as God. He who would save the world must be one with the world. All suffering things contain in his heart's space and bear the grief and joy of all that lives. His soul must be wider than the universe and feel eternity as its very stuff. Rejecting the moment's personality, know itself older than the birth of time. Creation, an incident in its consciousness. Arcturus and Belphegor, grains of fire, circling in a corner of its boundless self. The world's destruction, a small transient storm in the calm infinity it has become. If thou wouldst a little loosen the vast chain, draw back from the world that the idea has made, thy mind's selection from the infinite, thy senses' gloss on the infinitesimal's dance, then shalt thou know how the great bondage came. Banish all thought from thee, and be God's void. Then shalt thou uncover the unknowable, and the superconscient conscious grow on thy tops. Infinity's vision through thy gaze shall pierce. Thou shalt look into the eyes of the unknown, find the hid truth in things seen null and false. Behind things known, discover mystery's rear. Thou shalt be one with God's bare reality and the miraculous world he has become, and the diviner miracle still to be, when nature, who is now unconscious God, translucent grows to the eternal's light, her seeing his sight, her walk his steps of power. And life is filled with a spiritual joy, and matter is the spirit's willing bride. Consent to be nothing and none, dissolve time's work, cast off thy mind, step back from form and name. Annul thyself, that only God may be.